Okay, well, we're on the line. Today is February 14th, around 3:05, talking with Alicia Kuhl, who is an RV activist who's been speaking to city council, who tried to get some reassurances from the police chief a couple months ago about following the law and respecting the rights of folks in RVs. And I guess you've been able to get the police to kind of back off, but you were at the city council Tuesday, and you were also at a meeting of, I guess you got to Conscience in Action, or HUF, or both, on Wednesday. And you've been trying to get in touch with, what have you been trying to do? What do you make of those two meetings? Where are we at? What's going on?
Well, I've been busy doing a lot of different things. There's a lot of different things going on right now. We have some upcoming proposals that Crone and Drew, our council members, I should say Crone and Glover, have been working on. And one of them is to declare homeless state of emergency for Santa Cruz. And there are several other proposals that will address the homeless issues that we have here as a whole, rather than just trying to close down the Ross camp on March 15th. So that's the biggest thing that I've been trying to get awareness out about right now.
Well, I know that those proposals are coming up in 2 weeks for discussion, maybe action, on the city council. They involve things like parking areas for RVs out in Delaware, things like looking over ordinances to see which of them are anti-homeless or have a particularly negative impact on homeless people, such as the sitting ban and the don't sit on a bench ban and the
right.
Can only be in it for an hour at a table ban, or you know, or closed area ordinances, stay away ordinances. And then there's also a plan to permit private agencies to establish campgrounds, transitional campgrounds, or just campgrounds. I don't know if the word transitional is necessary. You need people where they can stay, and they're transitioning into anything else, so it's misleading to call it a transitional campground. And these are all a bunch of proposals that you and I and Drew Glover and Crone and the interns and a number of activists worked on for several weeks. They got sidelined. They got banned from the city council agenda as agenda items. And the only thing that Glover could do is bring them up. Although I have to, as a secondary proposal to the main camp proposals of the city manager, which were a series of essentially repetitions and slight extensions of existing nanny shelter, nighttime only shelter proposals, with restoration of the River Street Boneyard barbed wire campground for 60 people out of the several hundred or more. Way more, probably, that are out at the Ross camp now, and even way more than that that are around Santa Cruz.
Right, and that's my concern, is that although opening up some shelter beds is always appreciated, it's always a good thing, everybody knows that shelters are not going to accommodate the whole of the population, and they're also accounting for, I think the number was, they're hoping to open space for about 150 people. I think that we're dealing with more than that alone, just at the Ross camp itself. And like you said, that does not account for the rest of the homeless population. And so putting a closure date on the Ross camp without having other serious feasible options basically just drives the Ross camp, as well as the rest of the homeless population that's not in the Ross camp, back into the community. It doesn't do anything for anybody. And so I really want to urge the community to support the upcoming proposal so that we can start to get some things actually done.
Now, you've already spoken with Sentinel writer Jessica York, who came up with what I thought was a horrible front page story today, as well as a sort of a back page story, kind of which goes into some more details that she didn't really mention about the city's decision and the various proposals that presented by Tina Scholl, the assistant city manager, and Susie O'Hara. I don't know what she is, assistant to the assistant city manager, something like that, who are the two women whose voices and organizational skills have been... they're the ones who've been pushing the different, clear them out of the San Lorenzo campground, but oh wait, we have the River Street campground. Clear them out of the River Street campground. Oh, but wait, there are things coming up. Oh, clear them out of the Ross campground. Oh, but wait, there's stuff coming up. It's a kind of the series of pretexts used to address the concerns of neighbors that are getting upset at, indeed, you know, some problems they're having with folks who are in the vicinity of the Ross Camp, and some of whom may be in the Ross Camp, plus, of course, the spectacle of the reality that people in the Ross Camp, some of them are hard drug users and are using the privacy in their tents to self-medicate and engage in, I guess, what some would call harm reductions, others would call harm increasement. I don't know. So I guess at the meeting yesterday of the Conscience in Action and Huff, there were various things suggested. What do you think? And I just talked to activist Keith McHenry, who was also at that meeting. He said he wanted you to give him a call, and I guess he it's his understanding. Maybe it's just my understanding talking to you. You'll be going out to the Poor People's Campaign today, which is happening out on Live Oak at 1740 17th Avenue, something like that. Do I have that right?
Right, something like that. The Live Oak, something City Hall. From 6 to 8 p.m.
Right, and I guess the hope is that you can the people are really needed essentially because I guess one of the proposals yesterday at the Huff meeting was to have folks go out and actually live, and you were one of the people actually I think who spoke that you might possibly do this. It's 1740 17th Avenue for anyone listening, and it's from 6 to 8 at the Live Oak Community Resource Center, so that's probably happening even as people are listening to this broadcast. You know, jump on your bike and pedal through the pouring rain out to the Live Oak Community Center. Good luck there, or get in your car and do it, or whatever, or just know that it's happening, or maybe contact you, you know, or contact Huff at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I think that's the best thing to do if you want to be involved, and I'll pass the word on to other activists. What about this plan of Ross Camp folks, some people coming out from the house community and spending some time in the Ross Camp? Is that, heard anything more about that?
Well, I talked to Rabbi Phil earlier, and he said that we're still kind of in limbo over that, but that's something that we're working on getting going in the next few days. Phase one of that kind of didn't pan out, so we're still working on it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were impressed with talking with Jessica York when I spoke to you yesterday, and I looked up her story about the city council meeting, which doesn't say a word about the kinds of abuses that Mayor Martine Watkins engaged in, both toward the public and toward other council members, notably Drew Glover.
Right.
And I mean, it does give his statement about what happened, but her deliberately declining to recognize him when he was speaking, her giving a long speech denouncing him and not giving him any time to reply. I did note, however, that the attempt to cut back to when oral communication was happening, that's the evening session on Tuesday, when there were it's only one item on the agenda, which is homelessness, which happened at the end of oral communication. Usually oral communication now starts at its restored time of 7 o'clock and goes for half an hour. There were many, many speakers. They were given 2 minutes instead of 20 seconds or 1 minute or a minute and a half, which has been the case at various times via Watkins and her predecessor David Terrazas at City Council. But she did it. You know, she was overruled by the city council majority, with actually Justin Cummings voting in the majority to extend speaking time. And once that happened, in other words, a lot didn't give people more time to speak. They still had to speak at 2 rather than the 3 minutes that was traditionally allowed people at oral communications and in public comment, but has not been allowed in the last few years by council members who apparently don't want to hear from the public, or maybe they're just realistically saying, we're not listening to you anyway, so why bother, you know? You're wasting both our time. let's just get this business over with, you know? Go yak, yak, yak for 2 minutes or a minute rather than so forth. But in any case, she didn't restore the three-minute time, but when she attempted to shut down oral communications at the 30-minute point, when there were a couple dozen more speakers that wanted to talk, I don't recall whether an immediate motion was made without us, but I think some of us in the audience shouted, extend time, and we actually got, I think it was Glover, to make a proposal that Cummins voted on, in spite of Cynthia Matthews' warning that you know, we really have to get moving here, and we have a very busy agenda, and and her usual. Forgive me, Cynthia, I just don't put much credibility in your arguments. I take a different position than she does. So there was some audience response. What was your feeling about how the audience responded at that council meeting?
Well, I think the audience was really on point. I think we were all there to display how we feel about those very serious homeless issues. I think we all have a right to speak on it. And I'm with Drew's ideology that this is an important issue that we all need to have a voice on. We all need to work together and be heard on this. And that time is not the important factor in this predicament. We're in a crisis right now. So I like when he said that...
By time, you mean council time. You don't mean it is an urgency. I think you're saying it is an urgent situation for the folks outside. So if the council has to spend an extra half hour, hour, or 2 hours, then that's an essential thing that they should do and not be bellyaching about it.
Well, absolutely. It's their responsibility. They're there for us, and we have a problem. So, you know, Drew's okay with staying until 2 a.m. I stayed there until midnight for that particular meeting. I think we're all in this together, and I'd like to see some solutions, even if it takes until 2 a.m. And I noticed that the mayor was being somewhat rude, in my opinion, several times to Drew and Chris, that she was ignoring them. When he was talking about his proposal, I want to point something out that I noticed that I feel is really important, and it's about respect. When Drew was talking, the mayor was ignoring him. She fiddled through her paper, she drank her water, she seemed to do a lot of things that indicated she was not paying full respectful attention to him. And when other people were talking on the council, I noticed that Drew and Chris and Sandy, there are several members that always pay full attention. They have their eye on you. You can tell that they're looking at you with respect and listening to the words that you have to say. And I noticed that our mayor, Ms. Watkins, was not doing that when her fellow council members were talking. And I find that concerning.
Well, you know, my reaction to that is perhaps a somewhat cynical one. I don't think any of these council members are really generally listening to the public. There are exceptions, and maybe Drew may be an occasional or even a consistent exception. Who knows? But I think, for me, the spectacle of council members pretending to listen to you instead of, you know, it's true. The obvious indications of disrespect, like shuffling papers, walking out of the room, chattering with other city council members, whatever you're doing. I mean, if they actually leave the area, that could be the basis for a Brown Act complaint that council members were not present when a member of the public was speaking. I think it may have to go below a quorum. I'm not sure. But what I'm saying is that people can, to me, the hypocrisy of council members pretending to listen when they're not listening is not the big deal. But when I notice that Watkins deliberately ignores attempts by council members to speak on their issues.
Right, with their hand in the air.
Right, and I noticed this also discouraged Glover when this happened. He held up his hand, and she just kept, you know, she swept right on as if we were moving into the vote. I was sitting in the front row, and I raised my voice and raised my hand and pointed to him and said, he has something to say. And that, you know, startled her because, you know, I think she saw him and she just didn't want to recognize.
No, I feel like she was intentionally trying to not look his way so she didn't have to acknowledge it.
Correct. And I think she also wanted to pass on to do a very quick vote because she, Matthews, and Myers have, I think, corralled Cummins to some extent and fast-talked him into this two-by-two deal, the city manager's resolutions, but not entirely. I mean, that's the issue. But it's really hard to second-guess these council members, and I guess I'm more concerned about what members in the community like yourself are doing than what, you know, how many times can we, genuflect before the council members and try to persuade them this and that. And, you know, you can only present a reasonable argument so many times. And you realize that either they're not listening or they have some other interests that are more important to them than that particular argument. So you're going to be talking at the Poor People's Campaign tonight, I understand. Is that what you were saying out in Live Oak?
Well, I don't know how it works. I'm preparing something to say. I don't know if I'll get a chance or if I'll just get a chance to meet people and kind of, you know, spread a personal message while talking to people. But we'll see how that goes.
You might want to take around a sign-up list for people to support the Ross Camp with email addresses and phone numbers. Because I know that one proposal that was floated by Keith McHenry, I guess, earlier in this broadcast, assuming that I played it before, I'm kind of doing these interviews earlier in the afternoon, was that there be an actual sort of attempt to get out of the rain, a move into a parking structure as early as Saturday or Sunday for those who are being forced out of the Ross Camp with the threat of eviction, or for people who for various reasons can't go to the Ross Camp or can't get into shelter now. And that's something maybe happening 4 to 6 Saturday and or Sunday. Keith invited people to come and you know, keep a watchful eye and maybe join in that. So you might announce that maybe a possibility. He said he wasn't coming to this Poor People's Campaign because of his attempt to get tarps for the Ross Camp tonight that he had to do, or he had some other conflicts, as I understand it. So you could do something like that if you wish.
And I would just encourage people, like you said, that can't, because the Ross Camp is overcrowded. And although nobody is advocating for, like, a permanent stay behind Ross, we all know that's not a long-term solution. It's more of a let's not close Ross Camp before we have viable options is what I'm trying to really push. And so I would really like to see other viable options, and I want the people from Ross Camp to kind of hold tight and wait for those options, but for no more people to go there. They're dealing with a huge, huge overcrowded problem. So, the parking garages could potentially be another shelter location. It's my understanding that it's public property, so it would be safe under the Martin versus Boise, but I'm not an attorney, so.
Yeah, it's a question. Were the city ordinances, are they what I call the parking lot paranoia law and the parking garage, actually parking garage paranoia law is what I called it, and the parking lot panic ordinance, both which are trespass laws, so you can't be in the garage or the parking lots downtown unless you're retrieving or picking up or dropping off a vehicle, such as a bike or a car, or if you're going directly through. Or if you're a staff member, you know, then you get special privileges and so forth. And is that a violation of the Boise Martin decision, which says you can't give laws that criminalize sit, sleeping, or lying, or resting anywhere in the city? We don't really have a law that specifically says that, but most of ordinances are used to designate so many places where you can't do that for, you know, importantly, for long periods of time, that it could be a defense. And it, you know, might be something that the city attorney might not want to go to, but would the police department respect it? We don't know. We'll have to go and see. So people should be advised, you know, if they're going to the Poor People's Campaign tonight out on at Live Oak, or if you're going to, you know, check out Food Not Bombs from 4 to 6 on Saturday or Sunday and want to join this, you know, it's an open question. So. So what's been happening with you and your attempt to mobilize a 50 RV, angry RV dwellers to form a RV caravan around City Hall and blockade the City Hall until they give you some decent relief?
You broke up a little bit. What was the last part?
Oh, I was making a facetious, although not entirely, commentary that in San Francisco in 1988, RV dwellers pulled in all around San Francisco City Hall in order to denounce the plan to ticket RV people away from the Golden Gate Park area, which is what they were doing. I don't know how successful they were, but it made a pretty protest in the papers, and I was making a sort of a facetious comment about that. But I'm wondering how things are going with any kind of RV organizing. I think you gave a report on that yesterday saying, and I take it that so far not much is happening, but...
Right. Well, not much is happening so far. My harassment has been pretty much good off the scale. I haven't had anything happen to me, but I have heard wind of somebody else getting their RV towed away just a couple of days ago. So there are concerns that we need safe parking programs. That's part of the upcoming proposals, and that's the reason why I'm so passionate about this. It's both personal for me, but it's personal for everybody in the homeless population in the community. We need different, I call them tentacles. Like, there are a lot of tentacles of this problem, and if we start addressing every one of the tentacles at the same time, we might actually get some real changes around here. Part of it is an RV park. Part of it is addressing the needs of the people that can't go to a shelter. Part of it is a safe campground. Part of it is bathrooms being opened. Part of the proposals were harm reduction items for the people at the Ross camp right now, as sort of a temporary help while these other longer-term solutions are going to be happening. So the proposals are really important, and they include things for RV dwellers and vehicular dwellers like myself. It is a growing community, and so we do need to address this right now.
Here, here. Anything else you want to pass on, news you had about any how people out at Ross are taking this whole situation?
Well, I'm trying to make sure that they kind of minimize fear. That was another reason why I called Jessica York yesterday, and because the past couple Sentinel articles have put out stories basically that said there's a definite closure for March 15th, and that the proposals that were passed by the staff and not suggested by Drew were all definite things going forth. And then they don't tell you until the very bottom of the article or the news program that, you know, it's still going to be discussed Tuesday. It's like they let the public think that these things are set in stone when really, if you were at the meeting, they're still in discussion. Yes, there is a date for camp closure, but part of that voted on proposal was that they would come back in 2 weeks to discuss it further. So they're going to be offering resources, I guess, as much as they can come up with between now and then, see who takes them, see what they're dealing with. The March 15th closure date of the Ross camp is not for sure set in stone. So if you have something to say about it, if you agree that it's not a good idea until we have other options, you know, the next city council meeting is the time to talk about that. It's not a set in stone thing yet. It's still in discussion. And so I wanted Jessica to put out some sort of article or message or note letting the public know that it's not a sure thing. It's still in discussion. I feel like she did do that.
It's true, but it's interesting. I mean, I wrote Justin Cummins a letter today, which I think represented the views of folks in Huff, certainly my views, which asked him to clarify whether he, in essence, is saying it is a closing date by next March 15th, but if there's some reason to change it, we can talk about it on February 26th. See, that's what I'm afraid he was really saying, but I wanted to make sure, if he wasn't saying that, if he was saying there is no for sure closure date unless there are certain standards met, such as all this adequate shelter that has been, you know, praised and described with such, you know, glowing colors, agreement by the people to go to the shelter because it meets their needs, such as pets, partners, those people with drug abuse problems and habits, for that matter, which sounds like that's going to be an impossible condition to meet in standard shelters unless you have real harm reduction changes.
Right. And I want to say that housing is a right. I believe that housing, it's my personal belief that housing is a right. It may not have to be a condo. Nobody's asking for a penthouse. But basic living is a right. Nobody should be living under a bridge or under a bush, even if they do have a drug addiction problem.
Particularly when there's so many empty buildings around and so much wealth and so much profiteering going on here that has little to do.
I hear that all the time as a reason, like you need to prove your worthiness as far as, you know, your life decisions or, you know, whether you have any substance abuse problems, your mental health status, you know, all these things in order to prove to be worthy of basic human necessities. And I just think that's a bunch of BS.
And then when you answer those questions, you are put into sort of a nanny condition whereby you're less than a human being and you need case management. You need some programs that will get you out of this condition. Whereas people who are housed, who have these problems, don't face those kinds of restrictions or demands at all.
Right, exactly. And people ignore that. They ignore that, you know, part of it.
But what about out at Ross? I mean, you know, a lot of us middle-class folks or housed folks or even vehicularly housed folks like to talk about our ideals and our principles, and we're asserting them right now. You know, and I think that's good. I think it's appropriate. But, you know, the people out at Ross are going to be the people who in the main are going to have to stand up if they want to deal with this issue. And I'm often wary of doing much unless I see people coming forward to stand up. Now, when you distributed hot food and hamburgers, I guess it was 4 or 5 days ago, and I was out there interviewing people, and I'm playing a few of those interviews today, I was emboldened. Well, I was pleased by what I heard. But then again, people standing in a food line, and I've been in many food lines, mostly as a person interviewing them, say a lot of things. But they don't show up at the next meeting, and you can't. I don't expect them to. I think people want to have hope. People want to do the right thing. People want to show righteous anger. But to expect them to do it in the rain, leaving their property behind, getting risked of arrest.
And that's the thing. The people at the Ross camp have a little bit, I mean, you see me at every meeting because I have an RV and I can secure my belongings. It's harder for the people at the Ross camp to be involved.
Of course, but if they're not involved at all, and that's really the issue, if they're not involved at all, then it's simply a sort of a feel-good project by some of us folks out here who are involved, you know, because we can afford to be. And I guess
there is a percentage of them who are involved, you know, like Desiree and Greg, but I'd like to see more involvement as well. I just kind of tend to think that their obstacles are kind of getting in the way of that. So I try not to blame them for that.
Well, I know that your involvement is, you know, noted yourself, because I know you may still be, you know, running an organizing tent, or I'm not sure what you would call it, out at the Ross camp if you decide you want to proceed to do that. I think I'm going to leave it there, and I invite people to come and, you know, hustle on out to either Live Oak, or if not, to get in touch with Huff 423-4833 and volunteer to help out. And if they're involved with RVs, I guess they could try to contact you or contact Cynthia. I don't know. Are you still doing that organizing effort?
Yeah, you can contact me. My email is alicia1l@hotmail.com. It's A-L-I-C-I-A, just the number 1l@hotmail.com. And I'll be at the Poor People's Campaign. I will be at the next city council meeting. You can contact me on Facebook. I accept most friend requests, as long as you don't seem to weird or anything like that. I'm easy to contact. I'm here to advocate for the situation, and I'm willing to work with like-minded people.
Are you likely to show
invites of, you know, events that are coming up?
Right on. Are you likely to be at the Food Not Bombs meals this weekend?
I'm not sure, but perhaps.
All right. Well, thank you, Alicia, and stay dry.
Thank you so much, Robert. Happy Valentine's Day.
And the same to you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.